And welcome to another episode of The Dialogue Tree. My name is Roger Reichert. My guest tonight is Sina Grace. He is the author and illustrator of the autobiographical Self-Obsessed and Not My Bag. He's worked for Marvel Comics, IDW, Boom, Dynamite, and more. And he is currently writing for the new comic book series, Read Only Memories, based on the video game by the same name. Welcome to the show, Sina.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for taking time on a Sunday evening to talk about Read Only Memories. Before we get into the book itself, I do have a couple questions I would like to ask you about how you got into comic books. So can you tell us about yourself and how did you get into writing and drawing comic books? Like that's unique. You both write and draw. How did you get into comic books?
It's a pretty bland, like, the very, very beginning is pretty bland. I am of an age where they would sell comic books at grocery stores, and I would pick up the, you know, like, adaptations of movies that I loved as a kid, like the Ninja Turtles or Batman the Animated Series and stuff like that. And so I was a very big, like, Ninja Turtles, X-Men, Batman fan. And from there, I just, you know, fell in love and just would go to the comic store nearby and would draw. And you reach a point in your young adolescence where, like, suddenly you realize, like, oh, I'm kind of better at some of these things than other people are. And not that that was like that was the moment where I was like, oh, I should do this professionally. But
yeah.
I don't know. I just kept going with it and fell in love and kept learning and kept asking these questions. I really, you know, wanted to know how the cookies were made in a way that I don't think other comic book fans necessarily would explore. And so from there, I'm just trying to do the, like, very quick version of it. But, like, from there, like, in high school, I interned at a comic company, Top Cow Productions, that, you know, they did Witchblade and The Darkness and Wanted, that movie that had Angelina Jolie in it. I would, like, make zines. And I would make my own books, and then I self-published. And it just kept going from there. Like, I, you know, ended up editing for Robert Kirkman, who created The Walking Dead. And in terms of writing and drawing, I studied writing in college, and then drawing was just something I always loved doing. My sister also super was into art. She studied, I mean, she was more, she studied, like, fine art and would always, like, be an asshole to me and be like, she's like, you're not an artist, you're an illustrator. And I know she really deeply regrets saying that to me because I always bring it up in conversations like these. But it just came from a place of never feeling like I had to pick or I had to make a choice. And I just kind of found a way to make sort of both lifestyles work for me, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Nice. As a writer, and I know it's really hard to find an artist sometimes, or vice versa. So did you find that a lot easier then when you are creating comic books, that you're able to, like, when you want to do your own stuff, like, you're able to do both writing and doing the artwork too?
Right. Yes and no. Drawing is really hard, and, like, it's physically hard too, and it's emotionally taxing, I think, if you consider, I don't know how to put this, but, like, okay, so if I'm writing a scene, and let's go with Read Only Memories, and the scene calls for a double page spread, so that's two pages of comic art with lots of dancers and a rave, and everyone looks cool, and they also have implants, so they are modified, and they look like, you know, anthropomorphic creatures, and some of them are robots, and all of this. That took me 38 seconds to write, you know? And then I wrote two pages, and I got paid a full rate for that. The artist, that is, like, 2 to 3 days to draw. And so all I mean to say about that is, like, when you're at a point drawing the page and you realize just how long it's going to take, suddenly there is this emotional and physical toll that is taken on your body where you go, oh man, I'm going to have to sit in front of my table for like 8 more hours in order to accomplish this image. Sorry, or fudge. Pardon my French. That's all right. So I, you know, as I've gotten older and figured out a way to pick my lane as a creative individual, I know better than to volunteer myself as artist for projects that I'm not equipped for. And a book like Read Only Memories requires so much in terms of action, fashion, mood, tension. I don't even know what else I'm missing, but it's never once was I like, oh, gang, I should draw this. And it's great that we had a guy like Stefano Simeone. I think it's Simeone. He's Italian, so I never know how to pronounce his last name. But it's great to have a guy like that on the book because he loves it. He loves the challenge. He loves making things look cooler. And so when we saw the first issue, it was like, oh, I can go crazy because this guy loves to draw. Like, this guy loves making the page look insane. So the second issue I thought was going to be a dud and be boring. And then when I started writing it and thought about what he could do, it became this really beautiful, intense, and kind of wild story. And then I just kept pushing it because he like, to me, I'm like, oh, you're a glutton for pain. But I think he actually like, he likes drawing that hard stuff. I just like drawing people in their emotions. So it was fun. But yeah, so I've learned to kind of pick and choose what I'm appropriate for and what I'm not appropriate for. And it's fun all the same, because at least I know what I'm putting my artist through.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting. We'll get into more about how that art and the story come together. Tell us about the comic book itself, Read Only Memories. What's it about?
So Read Only Memories is based off the video game 2064, Read Only Memories. And it takes place after the events of the video game. We follow one of the side characters, Lexi Rivers. She's moved to Santa Cruz. She used to be in the police department, and now she is a private investigator. And she's kind of just making ends meet. You don't know why she moved to Santa Cruz. And you get to see her day to day. Then a robot comes to her office and is like, I need your help with a missing persons case. And the missing person is the robot's significant other. And Lexi is pretty dismissive of it. She's like, okay, this must be like a weird, like, you're clearly like the love bot. And the robot's like, no, I'm in love. Like, stop saying that to me. Because at this point in the mythology of both Read Only Memories, comic book, and game, robots have achieved sapience. So AI are individuals. They make their own decisions. They're not just toasters. They're not just here to kind of be your personal assistant. They can have autonomous lives. They have rights. So once Lexi begins to dive in, there's a whole slew of questions that she doesn't have answers to. And the mystery gets deeper and deeper, and the rabbit hole goes, she kind of goes further and further down the rabbit hole. And I'm trying not to give spoilers, but yeah. It turned into this really cool neo-noir cyberpunk thing that I fell in love with, and I had no clue that I was going to feel comfortable in this world at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that I thought was really interesting about Lexi is that, you know, when you first get introduced to her in the book, is that she's, you know, working on a case as a private investigator, and she's, you know, she's amongst the upper class, I guess, right? The high society.
Exactly. In Santa Cruz. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, one of the robots comes by and she makes a comment like, thank you, when they took her the plates. And the other person says, wow, you're so polite to them. And she makes a comment of, well, of course, why wouldn't I, right? Like, they have rights too. And then she runs into, like you said, she runs into Hetty and is questioning, is this real? Is this a real thing? So I found that really fascinating that, it's a fascinating theme about finding out what is real and what is love, and we'll get more into that. But what drew you to the project? What was something that caught your attention?
This is not a dig at anybody or anything. I hadn't played the game. And that's because the last game I played before the Spider-Man game was like Final Fantasy 15. Like I rarely have time to play video games. And when I do, I'm not good at them. So an editor at IDW that I loved working with, Megan Brown, asked me if I had any interest in the universe, and I started playing the game, and I fell in love. I fell in love with the mythology, the concept, the people, the characters, and I just kind of was like, okay, I don't know if I'm right for this gig, so I'm gonna like just pitch what I want to pitch. And if they vibe with what I'm saying, then I'm right for the gig. And for anyone who's listening, I'm so sorry. I talk like a Valley girl. I'm from Southern California. So like, I sound like an idiot, but I swear to you, I'm above an idiot. I'm a step above an idiot, whatever that is. So I played the game and I just really fell for the characters, and I saw Lexi, and I'm also one of those people that isn't like, oh, I want to be Batman, I want to be Superman. I always love the character to the side who has all this story that hasn't been explored, and Lexi just seems so interesting to me, and she seemed like she had a chip on her shoulder. And I was like, well, why does she have a chip on her shoulder? Like, what is she about? And I then went to my editor, who went to Midboss, and I was just like, okay, I want to do like Veronica Mars meets Westworld. Mm-hmm. This is the story I want to tell. I want to tell a story about a PI in a hard-boiled crime story that has like insane sci-fi repercussions. And I was so amazed that they were like, yeah, us too. Cool, we're in. Absolutely. So it was kind of one of those things where I just decided I'm going to be 100% myself. I'm not going to try and read the client's mind. I'm going to just say, this is what fascinates me about your world. Do you want to work together? And it was a kismet moment where they said, yeah, we do. And everyone at Midboss has been fantastic and, super collaborative and supportive, and I think we're all the same in terms of how we process character and how we think about things. So it's been, I don't know, it's been a lovely experience, and I just feel so lucky that I'm not in one of those like situations where I have to lie about bureaucracy.
Nice. What kind of challenges did you have when writing a character from a video game? And it sounds like you have some creative freedom. Like, how much creative freedom were you given when you were creating this character?
There was a lot of freedom. But Midboss was more just, they had to make sure Lexi lands where she ends up, in terms of the grand scheme of, kind of read only memories. There's going to be a sequel, Neurodiver. You're not getting like, an exclusive factoid there. But we did have to make sure that like whatever I did with Lexi spoke to where Lexi ends up. And there were some issues, and not issues, I hate that word, but like we had to make sure I was nailing the tone of her voice. Sometimes I made her too snarky or too kind of edgy, and I was like, okay, word, I get it. But they were really collaborative and open-minded to just saying like, what's your take on the character? What's your read on her? But they also knew very well who she was to them. And that was what was super fun, because when you get a note like that, it's really easy to take the note because it's so clear and it speaks to the larger tapestry that they're trying to create. It's not about ego. It's not about, you know, so-and-so trying to be heard. And that's what I've loved about the process so far, is that I've I've really gotten to tell a story that feels personal to me without feeling stage managed.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that I appreciate about Lexi too is she feels honest and she feels real. And I think that comes through in your writing. So that's one thing I really like about her as a character.
Well, I'll take it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So one thing I find fascinating. So I, little side note, I have written independent comic books on my own. And I always find it fascinating how other people do this. How do you work the writing and the art? How does that come together? Do you write a lot of like, this is how I see this angle? Like, I expect like a bird's eye view here, or do you give a lot of direction to your artist, or do any storyboards? How does that all work?
A little bit of everything. With all of the books I work on, I do secretly lay the pages out myself. That is because I want to make sure what I'm doing can be done within, you know, a 4 to 6 week drawing period. And I also want to know, like, when am I being a dick to my artist? So that way I can say to them, like, hey, you're going to need to spend time on this page. Or, hey, this is what I'm thinking. And then say, this is why I'm thinking it. Because when you're talking to people who are visual artists, you have to tell them why you're doing bird's eye view, why you're doing this view. And so I'll say something like, you know, oh, have it at this angle and have this thing be in the shot, but it's not going to pay off for two more pages, but I really need it here. And I don't show them what I'm doing, though, unless it's hyper specific, unless it's super cool and super interesting, you know, in my opinion, like not separate of read-only memories. I'm doing a book called Ghost in LA at Boom, and there was a panel layout where I was like, I'm just going to draw it out. Like, you can do your version of it, but like, this is what I'm thinking. And it, because again, like, I've been on both sides of the table, and I've been on all sides of the table because I was also an editor. So I'm trying not to disrespect anyone in the process. And when you see the art that Stefano does in issue 2 and issue 3 of Read Only Memories, you really see, oh, this guy can draw. Like, I'm not standing in his way. So I just have to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing whenever I say something like bird's eye view, this eye view, you know, worm's eye view, or, you know, like extreme close up. And then you have to explain why you need to see the emotion on their face and what emotion it is. And not on Read Only Memories, but I remember in Iceman, when I was writing that book, the page where he says I'm gay to his parents, I took a picture of myself and I said, he has to have this face. Like, his eyebrows need to be doing this. His mouth needs to be doing this. That's so hard to explain in words. And I just was like, this, he needs to be doing this. He needs to be both raw, fragile, exhausted, vulnerable. And how do you type that out? I'm like, here's the photo. Just do the Iceman version of that face. Without offending the artist. So I lay everything out privately, but I don't ever show them unless it's like something hyper specific. And then I explain to them why they need to do it specifically.
Wow, that's really interesting. The other thing I wanted to ask about was there's a lot of undertones in the story, specifically, like I said, what it means to love and can robots have human emotions? And even I would say even like a societal undertone where you have like this, you know, upper class, lower class kind of thing going on. How difficult is it to include these themes in your story without overtly hitting the readers over the head and saying, this is what I'm trying to say here?
With Read Only Memories, it hasn't been hard because the franchise, the video game, all of that, it already deals with it. So I didn't feel force fed. And then a city like Santa Cruz kind of speaks to all of these issues. So it didn't feel hard at all. I know that's not an easy, that's a dumb answer, but I'm trying to, like, you know, eloquently add more to it.
Well, I guess it makes it easier when it's all laid out for you then, right? I mean,
yeah, the concept itself, like, read-only memories spoke to that stuff. Mm. And that's why I picked Santa Cruz, because it was close to San Francisco and it was all there. So it just sort of, it lent itself to all of those things. And that's why I had Lexi move to Santa Cruz, because in the overall franchise, a lot of major cities in the game are kind of like, they're part of a larger collective, and they're so streamlined in terms of community, government, yada yada. And so I said, okay, well then, Santa Cruz is one of the cities that isn't a part of that. And Santa Cruz is lawless. So let's take a look at a lawless city and really focus on those issues. So I thought that was something that then fans would be like, okay, cool, we love this. And then I could say, hey, and then here's what I'm thinking about as a human being.
Yeah. That's cool. And it, and also, I mean, the other thing I love about it, it fleshes out the world of the game as well. So that's fascinating. What do you hope people walk away with when they read the book Read Only Memories?
By the time they finish, I think I want them to just really examine why they make the decisions they make. If that has any bearing on you at all. I don't know. Because the story takes several twists and turns, and we're talking about the concept of artificial intelligence having sapience, and then we're talking about private investigators in the future. So I think it's something like along those lines, where why do we do what we do? Is it learned? Is it from something else? And yeah, I'm so bad at those questions. I get them often, and I feel like I never have a good answer, but hopefully that helped for you.
That was a great answer. It certainly has gotten, the book has certainly got me thinking, and like I said, I went out and ordered the book right away. So I'm getting those, and I think our listeners too. I mean, if you are a fan of the series, and if you're not a fan of the series and you haven't even played the game at all, I think you can totally get into this book as well. So I think it has something for everybody. So really, really enjoyed the book.
That is, again, I feel like I sound like a baby or an idiot or something, but that means a lot. I don't know. I just don't know. Like, it was, I felt like I took a risk as someone, as a storyteller, to do this one. And it warms my heart when people are like, yeah, and I picked up what you were putting down.
Yeah, well, I think you did a really good job with the story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, Sina, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and meeting with us and talking through your new series.
It was my pleasure. And yeah, for anyone listening, Read Only Memories, please play the game. It's so much fun. It's easy until the ending, and then it's really hard. I like could not win until I had to look up cheat codes. Don't tell it. I didn't look up cheat codes, but I had to look up walkthroughs. Don't tell everyone. I don't care. Whatever. I'm not like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, live in truth. Admit that you're not good at video games and find walkthroughs when you need them. But it's such a rich world, and the folks at Midboss put so much care into it. And if you haven't played the game, that's fine. I tried to make the book for people who hadn't played the game. But I don't know. Anyway, I'm just very, very happy. So thank you for having me. Thank you for reading the book. Thank you for supporting it. And here's hoping that we get to do more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. And listeners, run out to your comic book stores right now. Order the series. You can, because I did. And it's great. So again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
The Dialogue Tree is hosted by Buzzsprout. the easiest podcasting software for hosting, promoting, and tracking your podcast. The Dialogue Tree is also part of the Little Fella Media Podcast Network. The music for the podcast is from Blue Dot Sessions. Song is called Calm and Collected. You can follow us at GamerHeadsPC on Twitter or go to GamerHeadsPodcast.com for more information.